Aloha and welcome to Conversations to Enlighten and Heal. I'm your host, KG Styles. A free audio download of today's podcast show is available at kgstyles.com. Today, I'm delighted to be welcoming back Dr. Jude Curvin. Dr. Curvin is an internationally acclaimed scientist, healer, cosmologist, and best-selling author with a lifetime study of consciousness and metaphysics. Jude holds a PhD in archaeology, having researched ancient cosmologies and a master's degree in physics, studying quantum physics and cosmology at Oxford University. Dr. Curvin has also worked with and learned from the shamans and elders of many wisdom traditions and is the author of The Wave, The Eighth Chakra, The 13th Step, and co-author with Dr. Irvin Laszlo of Cosmos, A Co-Creator's Guide to the Whole World, published by Hay House. And her new book is Hope, Healing Our People and Earth. To learn more about Dr. Jude Curvin and her work and sign up for her free newsletter, please visit her website, JudeCurvin.com. That's JudeCurvin.com. Please welcome to the show my extraordinary guest, Dr. Jude Curvin. Welcome to the show, Jude.
Thanks, KG. It's absolutely fantastic to be with you again.
Yes, it's wonderful to have you back. So we were talking before the show started about some very important topics. First, before, you know, we segue off into some of these topics we were discussing before this show started, I wanted to ask about your new book, Hope. It takes a grand view of the bigger picture. You take readers on a grand adventure as you weave together information about our origins, world politics, UFOs, ancient Vedic texts, astrological data, the Mayan calendar, and more. So could you tell us what inspired you to write this sweeping book called Hope?
Well, KG, it's actually healing our people and Earth, because I've visited nearly 70 countries over many, many years. And as you say, I've studied the nature of consciousness, and as a healer and a cosmologist, I've always really tried to understand the purpose behind events. What's really going on, you know, the bigger picture. And yet bring it back to us, because it always does have to come back to us and our experience and our learning and what's happening. And I was very conscious over the last few years of people feeling and sensing and experiencing this enormous turbulence of these last couple of years and going forward. And there's a lot of fear with that. And for a lot of people, you know, when we retreat into fear, we become hopeless. And what I wanted to do was to show the bigger picture of what's really happening. And to offer the hope of what's really happening, the higher purpose and the hope of what's happening. You know, I use this example. When you look at an ocean, and you look at the waves on top of the ocean, they can seem incredibly choppy and rough and frightening. But as I've experienced, when I first started to learn to scuba dive and got landed in 100 feet of Pacific with 6 foot swell, my instructor did an amazing thing. As I started to hyperventilate with all this turbulence around me, he took my face in his hands and he pointed me downwards. And when he did, I could see what was under the waves, this incredible new world, which was so amazing. I just forgot to be frightened. And in a way, with hope, what I'm trying to do is to give that bigger picture of hope and also recognize that for us to go through this shift of awareness that we're all in, we're all happening, we're all in it together. It's about healing our people, healing the traumas that we still hold, not just individually but collectively, and understanding them by country, because the US you can consider, instead of a nation, you can actually look at the US as an individual, as you can do with the UK, as you can do with China and Tibet and all the other countries. And when we do that and we understand, like an individual, both their astrology and their history, their personality, you can actually understand some of the, at a much deeper level, some of the patterns, the behaviour patterns that they're still playing out. And when we look at our whole human family, our whole collective in this way, we can actually get a deeper understanding of the collective fear-based patterns that drive our dysfunctional relationship, for example, with money, or our dysfunctional relationship with energy. And when we do that, as a healer, we can begin to look at the way we can heal wounds, and that's what hope's all about. And also, to a very profound level, our relationship with Gaia, our beloved Mother Earth, as a living being.
Mm-hmm. That is such a beautiful metaphor, I think, for this time about the, you know, what you were describing with looking at this new world that's coming in. And my guides actually have said the thing to do is to focus on what's coming in, not what's falling away. And that will really be helpful. And also to just be in the present moment. That's where you're going to feel empowered, is if you just stay in the present moment and use your breath. You're breathing.
That's exactly. Yeah, well, I say we're giving birth to a new era. And I'm not a mum, I'm a stepmom. Anybody who's listening to us who's actually gone through birth knows what you have to do when the birth begins. You have to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
You have to breathe. Mm-hmm. That's all you have to focus on, mm-hmm. breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. It's being in the present. And in that present sense, just feeling that connection to everything that is, because what this shift is doing, I believe, is it's remembering
mm-hmm.
who we really are, mm-hmm. remembering the wholeness of who we are and the wholeness of everything that is.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep breathing and keep being the present and keep showing up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, keep it simple. I mean, what you described is very simple. So could you speak about consciousness and the energetic connection between ourselves and Gaia a bit more? You started it. Could you give some more examples of that, real-world examples of how we could...
Yeah, I mean, first of all, my own experience. I think you know I was in Japan on the 3rd of March, the 11th of March this year, when the earthquake struck. And I'd been speaking to the Japanese before then. I'd been doing a lot of work in Japan and working with the ancestors of the present Japanese people, the Jomon people, and even further before that, the Lemurian people. And the Lemurians and the Jomon had an incredibly profound, harmonious relationship with Gaia.
Mm-hmm.
And from all that we know of them, you know, mystically as well as archaeologically, they lived in balance with Gaia for thousands upon thousands of years. And to do that, that has to be more than at a physical level. That has to be an emotional and a mental and a spiritual level. And you can only do that if you really do understand the oneness, that we and Gaia are truly co-evolutionary partners. And that what happens to us happens to Gaia, what happens to Gaia happens to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been speaking to the Japanese just before the earthquake and saying, you guys, you know, when you become stuck, you've actually lost that relationship with Gaia, or at least it's become very peripheral to your lives. And after having been on the 10th floor of an apartment block in Tokyo where everything shook, and it shook for a long time, Koji. It wasn't just the biggest earthquake the Japanese had ever encountered. It was also one of the longest. And it came on wave on wave on wave. And what I could feel as I tuned with Gaia through this was that she was becoming unstuck. And she was showing the way, in essence, for the Japanese people to become unstuck. And literally, it was only the day after that the Japanese Prime Minister, who's then called Miyoto Kan, came on TV and said to everybody, you know, in the middle of all this grief with not just the earthquake, but the horrendous tsunami, and at that point the Fukushima nuclear plant, what was happening there, had not really been fully appreciated. But with all of this, we are going to look back on this moment as a rebirth for Japan.
Mm.
And it was very much a rebirth of their traditional relationship with Gaia. And that is what's happened, because I've been back to Japan since. And instead of reacting and retreating into fear and seeing this as something separate from them, I think what's really, really important, that in my experience, the more gracefully we can go through the shift of consciousness, the more can Gaia. And there will be earth changes, probably, but they will be more graceful if we, as you said earlier, we can see that we and she are one, And secondly, if we can honour her and work with her and envisage with her this amazing new way of being, that instead of seeing her as something passive and separate, and certainly the appalling way we treated her over the last period of time, we heal our relationship with her. Mm-hmm. And we can do that in the most simple of ways. I mean, I was out in the garden this morning, and we grow all our own veg, and we've got the most amazing harvest of fruit this year, mm-hmm. Which I'm now in the process of freezing and cutting myself to bits as I try and do it. But it's wonderful. I'm just on a very simple level, being in nature, being with Gaia, tuning to her. And then, what my experience has been over many years, is the unseen realms of Gaia, the elemental realms, mm-hmm. and the devic realms mm-hmm. begin to introduce themselves. And you enter into an incredibly wonderful relationship with this amazing being that we call Mother Earth. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I spend time, you know, I love this time of year because I do get to spend time. I usually have my breakfast every morning out in my garden. I have a beautiful arbor with trumpet vine, and the hummingbirds like to come and feed, and lots of bees, and it is wonderful to connect. And one time I was working, my clinic looks out over one garden area, and out of the corner of my eye I caught a glimpse of this little garden gnome with his little wagon. And I know he let me see him. And he was just enjoying himself, and he just let me see, and he was showing appreciation by letting me see, I think. You know, that it is organic, and there's a consciousness, you know, with connecting with nature. And I can always deepen more in that, of course, but I do have a real, we all really come from, you know, all of us have the elementals. We can't walk and have our being, our physical being, and all the apparatus we enjoy to experience Earth if we are elementals in our deepest, you know, our cellular being. We are elemental creatures.
We are indeed.
And maybe that goes back to what you're saying about reconnecting with Gaia, that we are, you know, we are expressions of Gaia.
I mean, I love it that, you know, there are 100 trillion cells in our bodies. 90 trillion of those are not human. 90 trillion, 90% of our cells are bacteria and viruses. We are a community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I first started to write The Wave, which is my very first book, it seems a lifetime ago, but it was only about 6 years ago, I literally fell in love with bacteria. Because, you know, bacteria, archaea, are not only the most ancient of beings on Gaia, In biological terms, they've been around, you know, from the get-go, about nearly 4 billion years, and they still form something like 80 to 90%, not just of our own bodies, but the body of the biological mass of Gaia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what we need to do, I really do feel this is enormous. We have to completely change our relationship with Gaia, not just in terms of becoming more environmentally, you know, and sustainably conscious, but as a much deeper level of consciousness.
Yes, and our supersensible faculties. I think if you look at Neptune coming into Pisces, you're a Pisces, aren't you?
I'm Pisces Sun, and you know that happened when I was in Japan. Because as we both know, Neptune and Chiron are in Pisces, and that was happening around that time.
Yeah, that's true. It was taking its first steps. It's retrograded for a bit back in Aquarius, but the first of the year, right after the first of the year, Neptune will step and be over there for over 14 years. It'll be in Pisces, and I think, for me, I think that's where we begin more. I mean, you see with Hay House, all these, you know, it's becoming much more mainstream for people to talk about intuition It's not just that, you know, it's really become much more mainstream to be able to talk about your intuition. And it wasn't that long ago, if I mentioned my intuition in a conversation, people would, you know, or my guidance or whatever, you know, it would have been, you know, but now it's much more accepted. I think that will help us develop the language for this deepening process as our sight, our sense of sight, our, you know, the clear sentience, which is the clear, you know, the clear feeling, the clear seeing, the, you know, so that you really can begin to experience truth directly rather than as a projection.
Exactly. And, you know, as we both know, and I'm sure many of our listeners know, you know, they talk about a picture, you know, being worth a thousand words, and for me an experience is worth a thousand pictures. You know, when somebody has a direct experience, and of course, you know, the old adage, seeing is believing, is not. It's believing is seeing. When we're open to it, then we begin to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it is now, you know, there is this, I think there is this tipping point, mm-hmm. Which is crucial. Which is that more and more people are being open to these possibilities, mm-hmm. and therefore we will begin to more and more experience them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. And I think it's happening individually through each of us. You know,
it has to.
Some of us are birthing that consciousness more rapidly. You know, just because, you know, we contracted for that probably. I mean, we're wired for it. You know, certain ones of us are really just attracted. And then, you know, I think there are people who, in families that maybe are not at all, they're pretty conservative. And they're like the odd one out. They're the one that's different, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I know myself, yeah. I worked for years, not in my family, but as a satellite. Just continuing to transmit information and work energetically, which is maybe this is touching on some of the energetic connection, how we can use that to help shift things. You hear what I'm saying? Because it is connected.
Yeah.
So you hear what I'm saying, how you can be psychically connected to someone like your family or whatever and help them to, because you are connected, help them to have a shift in consciousness and birth themselves. Just recently, it was like a my mom went into an assisted living facility, and there just was not much communication with my brother, who's her main caretaker. And it's very interesting. I've been working sort of in the background, just energetically with this, and I just recently, he was recently connected with him for the first time in a long time. He was so much more forthcoming and called me sweetheart. I mean, that would have been unheard of at another point. So I do feel there's things are shifting. I mean, if he's a Capricorn,
so
the Capricorn energy, you know, that's where Pluto is, and so and that really has a lot to do with shifting the energy and cracking things open. But it's also in a trine with Taurus and Virgo. And so those are other earth elements. So there should be some ease, really. That's how I read that. That there should be some ease in these other areas, as much as there's like this deep... But Capricorn can carry that. They're so sturdy and... Well, hang in there and, you know, I think do the work once they get with the program. I think that's the main thing, is getting with the program. I think a lot of us can be in resistance until we realize, hey, you know, I don't know who said this adage, but the best argument for a north wind is to put on your overcoat. So I think, you know... Do you see, I mean, as I'm talking, or do you see pictures of how things can reorchestrate themselves in our world so that we can have glimmers of maybe what could possibly birth itself? You know, we talked before the show about think tanks coming together to share information.
Well, I think there's a number of things. I mean, if we go to the bigger picture, we've been sort of touching on the astrology, and for me, as for you, in fact, you know, understanding the astrological influences that are taking us through, you know, the last couple of years through now and through 2012 and beyond, I think are very, very profound. And when Pluto did move into Capricorn, I think the old institutions, the old structures, you know, really noticeably started to fracture. Where they could transmute, they are doing so. Where they're not, they're just fracturing and falling away. And I think the other thing with Pluto in Capricorn is that, you know, anything that's been hidden is no longer hidden. It is coming to the surface, because it has to, because otherwise, you know, we're either in denial, and that helps with what you're saying about getting with the program, because if we can see what the program is, if we're aware of what the program is, we can begin to get with it. So, I mean, Pluto's doing a fabulous job of raising what has been hidden to the surface, and I think together with Pluto, the other sort of outer planets have been moving, and especially this year, into incredibly important positions. I mean, with Uranus going into Aries, you know, Uranus, the great revolutionary, the great awakener, moved into Aries, the sign of empowerment, and for me that kick-started the Arab Spring. But it also kick-started so many other initiatives of people power, you know, not just through the Arab world, but generally. And I think that's going to be a trend that just continues. And this thing about, you know, you're saying about think tanks, people come together, not just to think, but to act. So, for example, online activism, such as through Avaaz and through others, is moving forward at an incredible pace and really having an effect. And so Uranus and Aries, I think, allies with Pluto and Cap. And I think the other one is, as we've mentioned, I think, perhaps before the show, but Neptune and Chiron, both of them now having gone into Pisces and then pulling out a little bit, but then going back in again. I think Neptune goes back in again in February of next year and then stays for a long time. And, of course, Neptune is the great measure of reality. So I think with Pisces being the sign of more spiritual understanding and Aquarius at the moment being the sign of who am I? Who am I really? I think we've got this amazing influence to look and understand what is real, what is illusion. What is about who we really are, and what can we do about it? So all those, that planetary influence, I think, is enormous at the moment. And what it's doing, it's actually part of this incredible tidal shift of consciousness that we're really, so we're like bobbing along on. And so I think that's part of the bigger picture that's to a degree hidden. But I think it is also very challenging, because what it's doing is it's shaking us awake, because it's so easy for us to just pull back, almost fear-based reaction of retreat into old paradigms. And yet what all of this is doing is saying, no, you know, go forward, go with this, get with the program. And when we do, then it really is amazing. Yeah. And so I think people are doing that, things are changing, and there are still major challenges, because we've really got to break down the old in a way. You know, the financial system, we had a chance to really radically go beyond its dysfunctionality in 2007 and 2008, and we didn't. And the powers that be, the vested interests and our own fear, I think, just hold back. But this year, and the various Mercury retros this year, are exactly the same as they were in 1932. Mm-hmm. So what I feel is happening is, like, what goes around comes around, but it's a spiral. So we're given another opportunity to make this time a much more positive, radical, you know, revolutionary change about getting moving on from what no longer serves us. Mm-hmm. And there's no choice.
Yeah, well, so what are some of the things that you see happening that would be positive as far as transforming the financial institutions and the way things, the established order?
Well, you know, I think first of all, what happens is down to our choices. And we cannot, just as what's happening at the leading edge of science is far too important to just keep with the sciences, what's happening within the financial system affects every single one of us. And the trouble is, over the last decade, the level of inequality that's been driven through the existing system is just unsustainable. And also the level of speculation, you know, the what's been called casino banking, and the fact that, you know, when it goes wrong, it's not just the guys who are speculating, you know, they're speculating with other people's money, in other words, our money. Mm-hmm. When it goes wrong, as it did in 2007-08, you know, we're the ones who are bailing them out. I think this coming couple of eclipses in November and December, mm-hmm. and the fact that Mercury
is... Yes, I wanted to ask you what you thought about these eclipses that have been happening.
Well, you know, it's going to be amazing, I think, because first of all, we've got 6 eclipses this year instead of the usual 4, but the last 2 of the year are on November the 25th, which is a partial solar, and then we've got December the 10th, which is a lunar. And Mercury goes retrograde the day before the solar eclipse, mm-hmm. and goes direct on the 14th of December, just after the lunar eclipse. So what we have is a retrograde Mercury arcing over these eclipses. And if you look at the charts for the eclipses, they are very, very challenging. Mm-hmm. And in particular, the chart for the solar eclipse in November arcs over the Eurozone. And just as it was Wall Street that really originated the 2007-08 global contagion, it's really what's happening in Eurozone with Greece as debts and possibly then, you know, moving on to Italy and Spain, that's really pushing everybody. And that eclipse energy suggests that there could be a default. Now, for me, what's really important is we use these times to create radical reform in the financial system, and that was completely bottled in 2008, and the reforms that have come out now are still completely inadequate, mm-hmm. to deal with what's happening. And the problem is that the debt, the sovereign debt of countries is so vast, mm-hmm. that the, you know, we talk about banks being too big to fail, this is too big to save. Mm-hmm. So what I'm hoping is that we finally get it, and the bankers are completely remorseless. They're not reforming themselves. They're fighting every last inch of the way because of their own trauma and their own inner, yeah. abandonment pattern that I talk about in Hope. So we've got to deal with this. And the way we can deal with this is basically on an individual and collective level, say enough is enough. And if there is a perspective that we have to bail out again, we say no, we don't. Now, what that will do is it will push the banking system to an unsustainable point. And there's 2 things that can happen then. Basically, either there will be a complete scramble to try and save it, or, hopefully, people like the Bank of England, who understand this very well, will actually reform the bankers. This is the one time that's left to us, I believe, without a complete destruction of the system, to get really radical reform through. And I think what we have to do in every way we can is to write to our senators, our congressmen and women, our MPs, go online and join Avaaz and get active, do whatever we can to make our views felt, that the old way is not sustainable. We cannot keep trying to
we've built a system that is based on debt, creating debt.
Total debt.
If everybody doesn't create debt every year, then it can't be sustained. And so there are a lot of people who are not, there are fewer people creating debt. That's one of the things that's pushing this. People, you know, are paying off their debt, they're creating the savings, which is, you know, and that is what is creating, you know, they want growth. And basically to have growth, to create the growth that they have is a false growth. It's through debt. consuming and debt and using and it can't go on. I mean, it won't go on. It's just how that can come about, you know, I think, and I think you're right, you mentioned that, you just get down to it and you start the work and you don't know how it'll work out or how it can work out, but you just keep the faith, have hope, and you take one step at a time, you keep it real, you stay in the moment, and you just put one foot in front, and you communicate with like-minded others who are doing the work too. And I think more and more the people who are doing the work, have done that work of transformation of their own inner garbage, they'll stick out. I mean, you'll be able to identify someone who is, you know, I mean, they're just, it's a different way of living your life and being in the world. You're not saying your language and all, so.
Yeah, and you're right, it's as simplified, I mean, my sense as well is simplify things as much as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. You know, we've stuffed ourselves full of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so if there's any opportunity for anyone to just simplify things, as you say, stop getting stuff you don't need. Now, I know a lot of people are in great, you know, financial challenge at the moment, and that is tough. But, you know, again, look to like-minded people in your community. You know, look to each other. Mm-hmm. Literally recreate communities. Mm-hmm. We've dismembered our psyche, we've dismembered our communities.
And what did you see that happening in Japan when you were there?
Oh, it was amazing, KG. What happened in the aftermath of the earthquake and the tsunami is it brought people together. People were incredibly supportive of each other. I mean, just everything was being about how do we care for each other. And, you know, the Japanese aren't, I mean, they seem to be big consumers, but at heart, they're really savers because they've been through, you know, hell and high water many times in their history. So as a people, they are more concerned, especially the older generations, with not consuming. So they've got a basis of tradition that actually now they're starting to remember and rely on. And community is at the heart of that. And so they're living more simply, they're not, you know, they're saving more, they're not spending on stuff. And that's certainly what we've been doing, you know, simplify our lives. We are growing our own veg, and it's not out of fear, it's out of love, it's out of this incredible sense of just remembering a deeper truth about who we really are, and living in that simple way. Mm-hmm. And it's not going back to ashes and sackcloth, but, I mean, you know, I write about In Hope, I write a chapter on the States, and many other chapters, as you know, on national psyches. And for me, it's very interesting that the US is a nation of immigrants. And a lot of those immigrants came to the States to escape profound poverty. Mm-hmm. A lot of them in the 19th century, for example, came from Ireland after the potato famine there. And when I was in Dublin, I did a workshop. And we went back psychically to the potato famine and just realised how traumatic that event had been in the whole psyche of the people. So that sense of loss, that sense of abandonment, that sense of scarcity, mm-hmm. obviously stayed mm-hmm. with the people that then emigrated to the States, mm-hmm. as it did from people who emigrated to the States, for example, from Southern Europe and elsewhere, but a lot of people went from Ireland. And so that sense of scarcity, that sense of loss, and when you have that trauma, subconsciously, unconsciously, mm-hmm. often you try and feed it by getting more stuff. Mm-hmm. And of course you never can. You can never heal it by getting more stuff. But I think a lot of that trauma has driven, you know, the sort of the mythos of the American dream, mm-hmm. which really is a myth, which is about somehow by getting more stuff, you're going to be happier. Mm-hmm. And I know that's a very simplistic approach, and I write in a lot more nuanced way within Hope. But I do think that is at the core of a lot of this sort of consumer ostensible growth, but growth driven by consumerism and driven by conflict. The other big driver of growth is conflict mm-hmm. and warfare. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the growth that the US has driven since World War II and before World War II, it's consumerism yes. and war.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yes. That's the reality. It is. So, you know, I think that, you know, I've talked about this with some people, and people are pretty touchy to talk about this subject, about what's driving us in our subconscious mind as Americans. And so it's people don't feel comfortable. So that shows you that there's a lot of energy. It's a trigger point for a lot of people.
Yeah. And you know, as a healer, KG, as I know, is that until we acknowledge what that unconscious, you know, then it can become conscious, and then we can acknowledge it and see it and explore it and understand it, not to replay it, but to heal it.
And something we talked about is also we're no longer identified with it.
That's right. Exactly so. Exactly so.
I think that's the hard part. Do you think it is you? You know, and that it's, you know, and but then when you bring it up and you realize, oh, this isn't me. This is just some story I've had going on that's been operating below the surface that has been controlling me, and this isn't who I am at all.
Exactly.
And then you become much bigger in who you conceive yourself to be, because there's a lot of that space gets filled up with truth. Yeah, which is very powerful. The truth is just the most powerful, you know, to face the truth and to be in the truth. You're totally, you know, I do this affirmation a lot. I'm confident because I know who I am.
Exactly. And it's always an ongoing process, and it's always that inner work. But I really do feel that, you know, I think what's happening now is that on the world stage is mirroring what's literally within inside us. For many years, it wasn't as clear, but my goodness, it's clear now.
Yes.
I mean, and what's happening in every country and on that world, in world event, is mirroring to us what is no longer supports us.
Yes.
It's mirroring to us the dysfunctionality that's held us in this old paradigm of fear. You know, I think, just a small example, well, it's not a small example, it's a big example of this. I was very conscious when I was in Japan in March that the earthquake and the tsunami happened on the 11th of March, 3/11.
Yes.
And we're talking about 9/11 and 3/11 in Japan, but also, I don't know if you recall, but on the 22nd of July this year, someone in Norway went on a gun rampage, and that was on the 22nd of July.
So you have all these master consciousness numbers. Yeah.
So 11/11 in that sense. Mm-hmm. So we have 9/11, 3/11, 11/11, and you know, as a healer and the work I do, you know, at 9/11, I really feel it was horrendous. But I really felt that day, and I could feel it as it unfolded, was an opportunity for the states either to leap forward into love or retreat into fear. Mm-hmm. And I really do feel that there was a retreat into fear that then has gone on into the wars.
Well, this whole old story, the old paradigm, the old story, you know, being the victim and victim consciousness and blame and, you know, that old story, you know, that we've had in our psyche that just keeps reproducing itself, you know. So,
but interestingly enough, on 3/11, the Japanese reacted differently. They could have retreated into fear as well, but they didn't. They actually began to come together, more so than they'd come together for a very long time.
Yeah.
But on 11/11 in Norway, it was an immediate response. We are not going to... They literally were saying this, from the Prime Minister and the Royal Family to everyone, saying we are not going to retreat into the fear of this, we are going to come together in love. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
So these three world events were mirrored to us. Mm-hmm. What are our options? What are our choices? And I think on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, I really do feel feeling into that moment is beginning a real healing process.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a resonance within our collective psyche of these events that then continue to play out in terms of our individual awakening and our individual reaction, response, and experience and choices.
When you go to Egypt, you lead tours of people, and you were in Egypt earlier this year, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't lead sacred journeys anymore because I feel that was a huge part of my life, but my work's now moving on into other areas. But you're absolutely right. I was in Egypt actually last October, and I could feel on that trip that things were that they were literally coming to a head.
Yeah.
Again, the amount of fear, the amount of anger that was around was just amazing. And I've been going to Egypt, as you know, for many years, but it was so intense that we weren't allowed to go and meditate in the temples. The temple police would move you on. There was an awful lot of anger. But when I was there a couple of weeks before the revolution, I was there with a Japanese group. And 13 years ago, I was there one week after a massacre at a place called Dara Bahiri near Luxor. And 52 people had been killed by terrorists, of which I think 10 were Japanese. And the Mubarak regime had used that to really, you know, pull down on the people and to continue a state of emergency, which meant that, you know, there was secret police and you know, people's rights and freedoms were very, very, very tightly constrained. He'd used that massacre to excuse 13 more years of more and more repression. And I'd always known through those 13 years that some point would come, and I always felt that it would need someone who's Japanese to somehow heal this.
Mm-hmm.
And so 2 weeks before the revolution, there was all this Japanese group, and I just explained what I'd felt, and there was a woman in the group who said, "My goodness, now I understand why I'm here," because there's a Japanese tradition that if someone dies away from Japan, their spirit has to be returned to Japan.
Mm.
And after the massacre, although the bodies had been returned, I knew that some of the spirits have not been. And in a way, that was continuing to energize this pain.
Mm-hmm.
And on that day, in January this year, this woman said, "I know why I'm here now, and it's to bring them home."
Mm-hmm.
And so we did the healing work,
and
she took on that responsibility to take them home. And immediately after we did that, KG, everything changed. And the guards at the temples, instead of saying we couldn't do this, we couldn't do that, were actually showing us, you know, where to go for the greatest energies. And it ended at Dendera, where the guards asked if they could join in with our attunement.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, they applauded the group without any backsheesh or anything. They just wanted to be part of it. And I knew then that something was coming that was going to be amazing. And within 2 weeks, the peaceful revolution had begun, and Mubarak was, the regime was toppled peacefully.
Wow, and a few weeks after that, that is great.
But a few weeks after that, we were in India, Tony and I were in India, and we really wanted to be at Pushkar, which is where Gandhi's ashes were scattered. And that evening, we attuned with Gandhi, and Mubarak was still trying to hold on. The revolution started, the protests were happening, but Mubarak was holding on and holding on. And that evening in India, we attuned with Gandhi and said, "Can you please help, you know, this peaceful protest that you began all those years ago in India to, you know, help now in Egypt?" And the following morning at 6 a.m, I went on the internet with my Egyptian friends to find out that Mubarak had stepped down.
Mm-hmm.
At the time that we were attuning with Gandhi, Mubarak had stepped down.
That is such a beautiful example of the practical examples of how we can shift the energy, you know, that are peaceful.
Yeah.
And how we can envision, you know, and then do as we're guided. You know, be open to miracles happening. You know, that things can shift, that there is this, we are this energy, we are all one. I mean, this is the truth. And the truth is what's going to really come, if we will be vessels of it, can totally create the way through that is us as individuals can't possibly see, you know, that it will be this synchronous thing that can happen and be orchestrated behind the scenes, and we will just all be pieces for, so that, you know, we create a transformed, you know, in our individual homes, communities, nations, the world. You know, it's just this, you know, way that can, you know, another name of one of your books.
And this is what hope's all about. This is what hope is all about. You know, when I wrote it, it wasn't just to help people understand. It was to help people understand this bigger picture, and it was also to help people understand our heritage and our traumas. But crucially, it was to empower people in this way to understand that we can be, as Gandhi said, be the change we want to see in the world, and to understand, as you so beautifully put it, this energetic consciousness resonance, and we don't see all of it. But when we allow ourselves to be that vessel, mm-hmm. that co-creative vessel, because we show up, we're not passive. We need to show up and do what we feel is right mm-hmm. in that moment. Then everything can flow from that. Mm-hmm. Everything can flow.
Yeah, and choosing for love. I think that is, you know, the old ways, the strife, the struggle, the warring, you know, it does not present us with permanent solutions, you know, to anything. So, and no one ultimately, really, if they're in touch with that, their own humanness and their own feelings, can feel right, this rightness within their own selves when they're against someone else or against something. It never feels right.
Well, it isn't right, and it's hurting ourselves. You know, I always mm-hmm. remember the survivors of the Holocaust who forgave the Nazis, and people asked, well, how can you forgive them? And the answer was, I forgive them for myself, because my hatred was hurting myself.
Yes.
You know, when we look at the conflict we still have, and the finger pointing, and the judgments, and the other, and the separation, It ultimately hurts ourselves, because we are one. And the more we can understand that, the more we can, you know, tread that path of forgiveness and tread that path to healing and to wholeness for ourselves and for all of us.
I have another question. What are your thoughts on the asteroid Ellen's possible collision with the Earth in November 2011?
Well, Bless, if Ellen does hit the Earth, I will be laughed at amongst other things. I think it's absolute garbage. As an astrologer and as an astronomer, I've been keeping a close eye on Ellen, and I think there's a lot of fear-mongering across the internet. There was a lot of views on the internet that Ellen could have been a brown dwarf. Now, as an astronomer, I know what a brown dwarf is, and it's a body that's more massive than, say, Jupiter, but not massive enough to be a star. And if Ellen had been the brown dwarf, then we would have seen it in terms of the gravitational effect that it would have had on other bodies in our solar system, and it really hasn't had that. For me, Ellen is a comet. It's not an asteroid, it's a comet, and it's actually following the path that, you know, is very classic for a comet. At its nearest, my best understanding is it's about 22 million miles away, which, considering that the moon is 250,000 miles away, is a heck of a long way. There has been some suggestions that Ellen can be tied in with earthquakes. I'm not convinced about that. And there is a view that Ellen was supposed to unleash massive earthquakes now, the 26th through to the 28th of September. Mm-hmm. And I personally don't think that's going to happen. What I feel, and I feel this is something that really is important, we are going through a shift. Certainly now, and as we go through 2012 and beyond, you know, I do believe there are major transformational changes, consciously and possibly with Earth changes. But I also, from 55 years of experiencing multidimensionalities, walking between worlds and connecting at a very profound level with Gaia, and not just with Gaia, but our entire solar system as a matrix of consciousness. Because these aren't just Earth changes, there are solar changes and planetary changes and all the rest of it, and galactic connection changes. Is that the more we are able to go through this shift gracefully and with love, the more that will be mirrored mm-hmm. in terms of the way that Gaia goes through her shift. Mm-hmm. And I think the great danger is to fall back into fear. And there was an awful lot on that throughout the internet, as well as some amazing things on the internet. So that's my perspective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if Elenin or any other body were to connect with Gaia, at some point, you know, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. The one certainty of our human earth walk is that it has a beginning and it has a completion. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be here in our human form forever. What we are spiritual beings, divine beings of light, who for the blink of an eye are walking our earth walk. Let's do it with love. Let's do it with consciousness. Let's do it as an understanding that we are co-evolutionary partners with our beautiful, beautiful mother. Mm-hmm.
That is so.
And
well,
let's not fall into fear.
Yes, yes, yes. Our own, you know, expressing our own divine heritage. So that's what I'm hearing you say. Oh, wow. It's so wonderful connecting with you. I've enjoyed our time together. I want to thank you for being with us. It's always a pleasure and an honor having you with us. Was there anything else that you wanted to share that we haven't covered you'd like our listeners to know about? Do you have any upcoming events or anything you'd like to announce?
Well, I'm probably it's easier if people go to my website page, which, as you said earlier, is just judecorrigan.com. But I really would love if people feel they'd like to read Hope, because it's had some amazing reviews. People are saying it's the book to read about the shift, because, and I hope you enjoyed reading it, because what its message really is that to share with people who we really are in an empowering way and an inspiring way, and to help people to understand what they can do. Because it is time for us, to all of us, to show up. You know, all of us to make our choices. And we can do that with such love and such grace and come together and to become a being that is unique and yet part of this oneness that we truly are. So I'd like to share the message of hope as widely and as inspiringly as I possibly can.
Well, thank you, Jude. Thank you for the work that you're doing for us. So, I'm going to just close now, okay? You stay there and we'll have our guys.
Okay. Thank you, KG. Thank you.